This episode of Sarah Talk is sponsored by Audible.com. Audible is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Choose from over 180,000 titles in every genre. Audible titles play on iOS, Android, Kindle, and more than 500 devices for convenient listening. Sarah Talk listeners, Audible is offering you a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Take advantage of this special promotion. Go to audibletrial.com/Sarah Talk and download your free audiobook today.
You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on. Let me change some words here. All right, ready? Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held. Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Sarah Talk. I'm Sarah Austin. In the studio again with me today, my wife, Becca. We have so much shit to talk about today, so we're just going to like rip right into it. But first, anything that you hear on the show, if you want to give us a call, we'll revisit the topic on a future show. 224-40-SARAH, 224-407-2724 is a good way to get in contact with us. Or also, you can email producer@saratalk.com, and we can read your emails on the show as well. Let's jump right into today's topics. This one is from the New York Daily News. A Houston 911 operator hung up on callers needing urgent assistance because, quote, she did not want to talk to anyone at that time, end quote. Cops say that Krishanda Williams declined to do her job to help people in peril because she apparently was not in the mood, according to KPRC. Williams, 43, clicked off a man in March who was reporting what turned out to be a fatal robbery at a convenience store. Hua Lee, who heard shots on his way out of the store, called for help when he got to his vehicle, the station reported. They just said, "This is 911, how can I help you? I was trying to finish my sentence and we got disconnected." Lee called back, but the store manager was killed before authorities arrived on the scene. When confronted by cops, Williams said, she often hangs up on calls that have not been connected because she did not want to talk to anyone at that time.
Wow.
Williams, who no longer works as a 911 operator, thank the fucking Lord, has been hit with the misdemeanor charge of interference with an emergency telephone call.
Good.
According to KPRC.
That's she needs to be charged more than that, but good. At least they're pressing charges. Holy crap.
Right? You think you're calling to get support? Like, this is a foundational service that we provide our citizens, and you expect to...
My hard-earned tax dollars.
Yeah, right?
Pay for your paycheck for you to hang up on me when I'm having an emergency? Hello? What the heck? Yeah, that's not cool. That's like, how do you go to a job like that and then say, I don't feel like it?
Right?
That's like a doctor going into the emergency room, being needed for emergency surgery and going, you know what? I'd rather go have lunch. I don't feel like it today.
Like shit. Oh. And in, oh, holy fuck, we're going back to 1940s news today. A black high school student was attacked with a fucking noose.
What?
By his white Mississippi, of course, high school classmates, according to the NAACP. This article also from the Daily News. The unidentified teen, a football player at Stone County High School in Wiggins, was near the locker room earlier this month when he was allegedly lassoed with a rope and the assailants yanked backward.
Oh, my God.
School officials have not expelled the four white students involved because white privilege and have not reported the incident to the police. What the fuck? According to a release from the Mississippi NAACP. The young black man's mother wanted to pursue charges, but was discouraged because the father of one attacker is a former law enforcement officer.
Oh, my God. So freaking what?
2016.
That's why this kid gets away with shit, because his daddy's always there to clean up his messes.
Right?
Oh, my goodness.
School officials have also not informed the mother about discipline against the assailants, even though she is entitled to know under a federal education law.
I'd have all four of those boys up on charges. I'm taking you to court. You're going down.
Johnson said that the young white men involved had come to school earlier this year with Confederate flags on their cars.
Of course they did.
Mississippi, which incorporates part of the Confederate flag in its flag, has had other recent incidences of racial hate at its schools. CBS News further says Wiggins football coach John Feaster, also a black man, told the Sun-Herald newspaper that one of the white students involved was a football player who was kicked off the team as soon as school officials were able to pinpoint who was involved. Now, I tell you that story to tell you this story. Back in the day when I worked in radio, I was a dumb 19-year-old kid who didn't know shit about shit. Okay.
Most 19-year-old kids don't.
And I was the producer of the number one rated morning show in our market, talk radio, which is, of course, super Republican. Okay. In the middle of Bible Belt USA, in a town, Decatur, Illinois. It's an agriculture, blue-collar town. If not for Firestone and Caterpillar and ADM and Staley, that town would have been nothing. But it was very centrally located in Illinois. So when I worked in the radio station, they sent me out with one of the sportscasters, which is crazy. And he was also a sales guy. So like everybody's pulling double duty here. But they sent me out to cover an NAACP rally with the Honorable Jesse Jackson. Now, I don't know what you know about Jesse Jackson, but the situation that happened, and it's funny because like I want to go back in time and research and read the news articles, because the way it was presented in the media and the way like my evolved perception of the bias in the media, I don't know what to believe now. So it was, there were like four or five black students in one of these high schools that got into a brawl at a football game, and they were expelled. And Jesse Jackson rode into town on his fucking horse to, you know, save these kids and defend them. I remember being sent out to cover a march that Jesse Jackson was holding. And, you know, of course, as you're reporting on this stuff, they want to know how many people are there and what's the mood and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. There was bus after bus after bus after bus of people shipped in from Chicago.
Oh, wow.
To make it look like this was a much bigger deal than it was. Mm-hmm. That more people turned out to support these kids, which we regarded as hoodlums. You started a fight at a fucking football game.
Right.
Now, that doesn't allay the fact that you shouldn't be fucking tying nooses around people. But I just think it's interesting that the way the media handles these kinds of stories, and also the white privilege that's tied into it. Mm-hmm.
Well, they have to put a spin on it. They got to, you know, make it newsworthy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and the more sensational, the better.
Sure. Just makes me wonder, you know, like, had it been a black kid doing this to a white child, or a group of black guys doing this to a white kid,
how differently would it have been reported?
How differently would the discipline would have happened?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they would have been all over those boys. You're expelled, you're gone, you're, you know, and yep. And they would have encouraged the parents of the victim to go to the police. And
press every charge you could have. Yeah.
You know it would have been handled differently. And you don't have to be a genius to know that. You just look at all the people that are in prison and look at their skin color and look at the percentages of black Americans that are in prison and why they're
right,
in prison.
Right. That's the key. So you think to yourself, well, it's 2016. How are we possibly still dealing with stuff like this? Well, the next story comes from ABC News. Former Ku Klux Klan leader David Duke is polling high enough in his U.S. Senate seat bid that he will participate in a televised debate to be held on November 2nd at a historically black university of all places.
That's fucking scary.
Right? You get to put this guy on a microphone in at least statewide audience. Wow. You know people all over the nation are going to tune into this thing. Mm-hmm. Duke tweeted, quote, "Important news, exclamation mark. I have qualified for the U.S. Senate most important debate in Louisiana on November 2nd. I can't wait to tell the truth. Nobody else dares."
Oh, great. He's a little Donald Trump's puppet.
Indeed. Candidates must show at least 5% support in the independent Mason-Dixon poll to qualify for the debate under the rules set by Raycom, an Alabama-based media corporation that will broadcast the event. Duke, who announced his campaign in July, made the cut with 5.1%. Just barely.
But, so I wonder how many of those were paid for votes to get it right over the threshold.
But well behind the front runners, Republican State Treasurer John Kennedy's 24.2% and Democrat Foster Campbell's 18.9%.
Jeez.
The debate will be held in New Orleans at Dillard University, a historically black university. Duke founded the white supremacist Knights of the Ku Klux Klan in Louisiana in 1974 and held the title of Grand Wizard. He founded another white nationalist organization in 1980, the National Association for the Advancement of White People. And I remember in this situation in Decatur, Illinois, with these kids at the football game, that was a big deal. Like, people would come out and, well, why do we have a Black History Month and not a White History Month?
Oh, my God. You want to know what white history is?
You have 12 White History Months.
Right.
And the white history that you should be learning is that Europeans landed, fucked over all of the natives, shipped over slaves from Africa, fucked them over, shipped over slaves from the Chinese, made them build a goddamn railroad, fucked them over.
And the white money machine is still fucking over the Indians.
Oh,
look at
definitely.
North Dakota. And
this, like, pipeline thing, yeah.
Yeah. Like, seriously. You want to talk about white history? Get your facts straight. Then we'll have a conversation.
Now, Duke has also ventured before into politics, serving one term as a Republican Louisiana state representative. I don't know how he got elected. And running in the Democratic presidential primaries in 1988 and the Republican presidential primary contest in 1992. He has also run unsuccessfully for the U.S. Senate, the House of Representatives, the Louisiana governorship, and the Louisiana State Senate. At what point do you go, and maybe it's me.
Right? Well.
In this campaign, Duke is running as a Republican and said he's focusing on immigration. Mm-hmm. Unless immigration is stopped, he says, the whole basis of America is changed.
What? No. No. America started because of immigration. Don't these people read?
No, these people can't read. That's the problem.
True.
You're talking about, like, the poor South.
Ugh, sickening.
He says, we'll lose our rights. This is, like, classic Republican bullshit here.
Yeah.
We will lose our rights. We'll lose our gun rights. We will lose a lot of our freedom. Now, look. This gonna take our guns away stuff, I'm over that shit. Because for 7.5 fucking years, you've all been saying, Obama's going to take our guns.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what?
Here we are.
7.5 years. Right? maybe he should have taken away the gun from that fucker that shot up the Pulse nightclub.
Right. Well, they'll say that he was an immigrant. And,
right.
And even though he wasn't, his parents were.
But stupid.
Seriously.
But I'm over this bullshit about we're losing our rights.
You haven't lost a single right.
And this is just a kind of a microcosm of what we're seeing in the election right now. The fear campaign, like, all anybody knows how to do is scare you into voting for someone else, right? So nobody is coming out and saying, vote for me because look at all the good shit I've done. Look at all the good shit I'm going to do. It's don't vote for that guy because he does scary things.
Right.
Duke's platform has 7 main planks, including calls to, quote, "Stop the Ethnic Cleansing of America," end quote,
what?
Alleging that white Americans of European descent are being persecuted and, quote, "stop the racist discrimination of affirmative action programs," end quote. And if that's not absurd enough...
How can anybody take this guy seriously?
You can't. If that's not absurd enough, he also proposes an end to the IRS and the Federal Reserve Bank.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Democratic candidate Foster Campbell said in an email, quote, "It's unfortunate that the debate organizers have allowed Mr. Duke to participate. His destructive rhetoric is a distraction from this campaign, which is about our future, not our past." If you vote for the former leader of the KKK, shame on you. Shame on your house. Shame on your goat.
Your dog.
The shame on your pickup truck with the shotgun in the back window.
And your Confederate flag and your overalls. Okay.
All right. We're really being bad. We're kind of being douchey right now. The next story comes from the Huffington Post. House Bill 2, our favorite law in North Carolina, has just cost the state another $250 million.
Big surprise there.
North Carolina just lost another $250 million to House Bill 2, the state's controversial law that discriminates against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. CoStar Group, a real estate research firm, announced this week that it has chosen Richmond, Virginia, for its new research operations center. The company had been looking around the country for the right spot and was initially eyeing Charlotte, North Carolina, but the board rejected the location because of House Bill 2, the Charlotte Observer reported on Wednesday. Richmond, meanwhile, will get a nice boost to its local economy. The firm's expansion means 730 new jobs and $250 million investment. And how can you be Pat fucking McCrory and go to sleep at night going, "I'm making the right decision"?
I think at this point, it's just ego. Like, he knows he's wrong, but...
Is he so far in that he can't turn around now? And
it's funny because I grew up my whole life hearing all these people joke about how horrible Florida is and we need to just dig a moat at the edge of Florida and send Florida off into the ocean with Cuba. And I think now people are like thinking maybe they need to move that moat up to just above North Carolina and just get rid of the whole...
Now, for those of you living under a rock for the past year, Governor Pat McCrory signed House Bill 2 in March. It prevents local governments from passing LGBTQ anti-discrimination policies, and going further than any other state, it bans transgender people from using public bathrooms that match their gender identity. The backlash has been brutal. Businesses have boycotted the state in protest. Big-ticket entertainers have canceled shows. More than 90 major companies, including Apple, Facebook, Airbnb, Yahoo, Twitter, Marriott, Pfizer, and Levi Strauss signed a letter urging McCrory to repeal the law. Prominent universities have rebuked it. PayPal scrapped a plan to expand in Charlotte. The NBA relocated its All-Star game. Cities including San Francisco, New York City, Atlanta, and Washington, D.C. banned government-sponsored travel to the state. North Carolina has already lost at least $395 million to House Bill 2, according to Wired, which crunched some numbers in mid-September. This guy is like, so he's up for re-election, and his Democratic challenger, Roy Cooper, is wiping the goddamn floor with
him. I'm sure he is. This, like, thinking about what is going to become of North Carolina. I have family that lives in Tennessee, and they live in what is known as a dry county. I don't know if you're familiar with that terminology.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to go out of the county to buy alcohol,
also.
Right? I think these poor people are going to find themselves in North Carolina having to leave the state to buy their iPhones. And it's going to be hilarious because there's not going to be much left of their economy after.
No, definitely.
Nobody's going to want to have anything to do with them.
Moving on. In other transgender restroom law news, our favorite state.
Indiana?
Texas.
Oh.
I know there's so many favorite states right now, though. Fucking idiots.
I thought I was going to get that one for sure.
The Austin American Statesman, which I believe is a newspaper. Texas small businesses decry proposed transgender bathroom law, saying Texas Republican leaders are threatening jobs and the economy. More than 200 small business owners issued an open letter urging legislators to abandon plans that include a state law targeting transgender bathrooms.
Interesting.
The letter described, quote, a growing sense of dread, end quote, that Texas will follow the path set by North Carolina, where a backlash to a similar law enacted in March will cost the state's economy several hundred million dollars in canceled sporting events, and we told you all about that. Now, the letter says, quote, that's why we oppose any Texas legislation, broad or narrow, that would legalize discrimination against any group. That kind of legislation doesn't just go against our values to be welcoming to everyone. It jeopardizes the businesses we've worked so hard to create, and it threatens the jobs and livelihoods of everyday Texans. Unveiled in San Antonio, home to the Final Four of the 2018 NCAA men's basketball tournament, the letter was a direct response to Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's call for legislation that he has dubbed the, quote, Women's Privacy Act. Quote, transgender people have obviously been going to the ladies' room for a long time, and there hasn't been any issue that I know of, end quote, Patrick said last week in a speech to the Dallas Regional Chamber. But if laws are passed by cities and counties or school districts to allow men to go into a bathroom because of the way they feel, we will not be able to stop sexual predators from taking advantage of that law like the sexual predators take advantage of the internet, said Patrick, who presides over the Texas Senate. Now, again, this goes back to that whole Republican fear-mongering. Like, that's all they know how to do. Patrick and other leading Republicans also favor legislation that would help provide legal protections for people and businesses refusing to serve gay couples or participate in same-sex marriages over religious objections. In Texas, Tuesday's open letter not only sets the stage for an animated battle when the 2017 legislative session convenes in January, it underscored deepening divisions between social conservatives and many in the business community, a typically reliable GOP ally, on issues that include gay marriage and allowing transgender Texans to use bathrooms that conform to their gender identity, not the gender on their birth certificates. The legislative priorities for the Texas Association of Businesses, adopted last month by its board of directors, call for opposition to religious freedom bills that are, quote, discriminatory and would hurt the economy. The powerful business lobbying group also opposed similar bills, which didn't pass during the 2015 legislative session. Holy shit. Looking ahead to 2017, State Representative Matt Krause, Republican of Fort Worth, has said he will again seek to amend the Texas Constitution to allow business owners to refuse services to people whose lifestyles clash with their religious beliefs. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has proposed taking incremental steps, such as exempting religious groups from non-discrimination laws on hiring and housing, protecting small businesses from having to provide goods or services for same-sex couples, and not forcing government employees to comply with the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that allowed gay marriage. Paxton's proposals were favorably received by Republicans, of course, at a state Senate committee hearing in February. You've got to fucking be kidding me.
Well, when you have business owners coming back and saying, oh, this isn't going to be good for us, it makes me wonder how this is going to play out. Are the politicians really working for the people? Because if, like, you know, I know there's businesses in North Carolina that are going, this is really hurting us.
Right.
Stop it. So, you know, I think they're hurting their, like, people are going to leave because they can't have a business.
Oh, sure. And we've seen that in North Carolina.
It's stupid. Like, they're hurting their own economy. And Texas is a big state. That's a lot of economy to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, North Carolina is not, put North Carolina inside of Texas. I don't know how many times.
All right. Let's look at population. Texas is number two, just after California, with 25 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And North Carolina is number 10 with 9 million people.
Yeah, it's just crazy. They need to start listening to their businesses.
And it just shows, to me, I think, a bias in the representation by these politicians, right? Clearly, the businesses are saying, we don't want this. It's bad. We know it's going to be bad for our businesses.
Right.
And yet, you're not listening to that. You're speaking to faith leaders.
Right.
And you're taking their concerns at higher weight than the business community.
And the faith leaders, let's talk about that. They're not contributing to the tax dollars.
Yeah, they're not doing
shit.
So
their word is basically empty. Your business owners are paying sales taxes and business taxes. And so if they can't make money, neither can you.
Quote, Texas has always been a place of fierce independence and a great big pioneering spirit, end quote, said David Wyatt with Wyatt Brand, a business support company in Austin that endorsed the letter. Quote, companies, voters, and political donors won't stand for legislators dictating government overreach into individual liberties, end quote. Good, get more people like you together, please.
All right.
Other Austin businesses listed on the letter included GSD&M Advertising, Home Slice Pizza, where I've never eaten, but it sounds like the best goddamn pizza in Texas, Alamo Draft House Cinema, and Bunkhouse, which manages Hotel San Jose, Austin Motel, Hotel St. Cecilia, and other properties. So there you go. There's the places you want to spend your money.
Well, and that's the other thing to think about. It's going to hurt tourism. And a lot of people go to Texas for vacations because there's so many different things to do.
Well, I think the interesting thing with this is that the business community has seen the writing on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at North Carolina, it's impossible to not see the tidal wave coming at you.
I have family in North Carolina, and they have this great big farm, and they do the corn maze and the haunted maze and all this stuff every year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to go, but
not if your wife can't go to the bathroom.
Right. If I can't take you and feel that we're going to be comfortable and safe, then we're not going to go.
Right.
And it's sorry, but like how many people have to think about where they vacate? You shouldn't have to think about where you vacation and whether you're going to be safe unless you're walking through like Brooklyn or, you know, these inner cities. If you're walking through areas that are not safe, but you shouldn't have to base your vacation on where you can go to the bathroom. That's stupid.
Right. So much for these United States.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
The next story comes from CBC News. Alberta judge orders 4-year-old not to wear girls' clothes in public. Susan Smith says she remembers walking out of the courtroom in Medicine Hat, Alberta, last December in shock after a judge ordered that her 4-year-old child would not be allowed to wear feminine clothing in public. I can't fucking believe this is happening in Canada. I just don't get it. It happened in family court during a custody battle. Smith was the primary caregiver. CBC News is not using a real name to protect the identity of the child. Smith's family's story begins a few years ago when the young child, who was born male, first started telling Smith she was a girl. Her child is now 5 years old. And you're going to hear in the story here, this is a very common story for kids who realize at a young age. Smith refers to her child as they rather than the less gender neutral pronouns of him or her. But over time, Smith says her child became more insistent, introducing herself as a girl to others. When Smith would say things like, "You're such a good boy," the child would act out in frustration and anger. Then one day at the age of 4, Smith says her child asked her how old she was when her penis fell off.
Oh my gosh.
"I explained to them the female and male anatomy and that what you get when you're born is what remains your entire life," says Smith. A few days later, she says her child woke up in the middle of the night to tell Smith she was going to cut off her penis.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
But we're talking 4-year-old.
Right.
"My child was severely unhappy and prepared to do anything to prove to mom that they were not a boy. It was basically like a ton of bricks. I got hit. It was a major wake-up call." Smith says she then sought some professional help, started researching gender dysphoria, and decided to acknowledge her child's preferred identity. "Our eyes locked, and it was maybe the millionth time they told me they were a girl. And I promised I was going to do whatever I could to validate and support them, and to be that one person they could go to." She says as soon as she did, the outbursts and the tantrums were replaced with a happy, confident child, as we see time and time again.
This is nothing new.
Smith and the child's father are separated and share custody. Smith says she told the father what had happened and about her decision to support their child. Weeks later, he served her with papers seeking primary custody, blaming her for the child's gender confusion and anxiety. When the two went to family court in Medicine Hat in December 2015, Judge Derek Redman kept Smith as the primary caregiver, but in his interim order, said the child would not be permitted to wear clearly female clothes in public, but if desired, could do so in private.
Whoa.
Canada. We need to talk, eh? Sorry, but this is bullshit. You can't dictate from the bench who can wear what fucking clothes.
Right? Oh my gosh. I couldn't imagine. And, you know, our child, he's crazy when he comes out. I go wear whatever you want, buddy. And he'll come out with some clothes and they're mismatched. And it takes every fiber in my OCD
not to make him
change into something that matches when it doesn't. And that's just, you know, a boy picking out clothes. I couldn't imagine being that mother who's so supportive and wants her daughter to express how she feels and wear what she wants, and then being told, nope, you're not allowed to let that child do whatever they want.
Right. And how do you go back to your child and say, well, you know, mommy said she would support
you,
but
like, how do you,
a judge in a court says you have to wear boy clothes.
But you don't know that he's just some old guy on a bench that's a jerk, apparently.
Then in February, the case went before Judge Fred Fisher. In his interim order, he again stated the clothing restriction, which is stupid, and granted primary custody to the father. What the fuck?
Oh my God.
Smith was given limited access. By this past September, the interim clothing order was revised by a third provincial court judge. Judge Gordon Crink said, after consulting with a parenting expert, which we should have done with the first fucking judge.
Right.
The parents must provide both boy and girl clothing options, and the child can then choose from those options. Are you fucking kidding me?
Which is fine, but you know damn well that this douchebag father isn't gonna let his little boy dress like a little sissy girl.
Angela Reed with the Trans Equality Society of Alberta says this unusual court order dictating the type of clothing a child wears goes against Alberta's Bill of Rights. No shit.
Mm-hmm.
She says gender identity and expression are both protected, and the legislation does not require a diagnosis of gender dysphoria or any other medical condition. These rights apply to everyone. So if you're just a guy who likes wearing dresses, go for it.
Right.
Why the fuck don't we live in Canada?
Well,
it's cold there.
Yeah.
That's part of
You got Tim Hortons, but that's about it.
Tim Hortons. Today's episode is brought to you by my friend Drew, who brought me a package of Tim Hortons from his most recent trip to New York. Thank you, Drew. I love Tim Hortons. Where the fuck was I? If it's actually a boy who thinks he's a boy, but he wants to wear dresses anyway, that is totally okay. And that should not be prevented by the court, says Reed. Reed says this is the third case she's seen like this. However, it's the only one involving a child in a custody case. In the other situations, she says it's the parents who aren't being allowed to dress in the clothing of their choice when visiting their children. Which is a whole other can of worms.
Yeah. It's just sad to me because this poor kid is probably like his relationship with the father. He's like ruining his relationship with his child.
Oh, definitely.
I totally misgendered the child, but I was talking about the dad. Sorry.
Sorry. It's Canada.
Sorry.
Eh?
But it, like, seriously, this poor little girl's like just trying to be herself.
Yeah.
And that's not good enough for dad. And like, she's got to know that. I hope that this doesn't, I mean,
right.
It's scary.
Right. This is the kind of the home environment that leads to kids trying to kill themselves.
Well, but think about this girl, just to prove to her mom that she was a girl, she was going to cut her penis off.
Yeah. Oh, my
God.
And
now her dad has custody of her.
Mm-hmm.
What lengths will she go to?
Right.
Will she go back to that thought? Well, daddy doesn't believe that I'm a girl.
Right.
So I need to prove it
to
him.
I have to do, yeah. In more Texas is the most fucked up state in the union news, transgender man sues Houston officers who hurled insults during an arrest. Let's see, this is from the Houston Press. Neither Chris Smith nor his attorney understand how talking on the phone on a sidewalk next to a fast food restaurant parking lot ever became a punishable crime, but one night this past December, Smith found himself in jail because of it. Smith was walking along Westheimer in Montrose on the way to his girlfriend's house when the phone rang. His employer was calling, and so to get away from the bustling traffic, Smith walked toward the Burger King, where it was a little quieter. Midway through his brief phone conversation, a police cruiser pulled into the parking lot right in front of a man who appeared homeless, sitting at the very back of the lot. Police got out to arrest the man. Not wanting to deal with the ruckus, Smith started to walk away. When a cop yelled out to him, "Stop! Come over here!" Smith remembers. "They ended up arresting me right away," Smith said. "I asked them what they were arresting me for, and they said trespassing. They took us both in the back of the police car." As though getting arrested for talking on the phone in a public area wasn't already worse enough, Smith, a transgender man, also endured endless taunting from the arresting officers once they found out he was transgender, which is why, taken all together, Smith is now suing the city of Houston, the arresting officers, and Burger King, whose employees called the police originally, for up to $10,000, as the Houston Chronicle first reported. Smith says after dropping off the homeless-looking man at the Harris County Jail, for whatever reason, they proceeded to take him, instead, to the city jail in southeast Houston. Fearing harassment or assault in the men's jail for being transgender, Smith, who had not yet fully completed his gender transition, not entirely sure what that's supposed to mean, informed the officers that he is still listed as female on all his identifying documents, and so perhaps needed to be housed with females. That's when the taunting began, Smith says. They told me, quote, "We don't care if you don't have a dick," end quote, Smith recalled, and according to the lawsuit, they also taunted him for not being a real man. The insults continued for the entire duration of the ride to jail, Smith said. "They were trying to humiliate me to the point that it was breaking me. It was stupid, it was completely immature and unprofessional." On top of it, the officers never buckled Smith's seatbelt.
Oh my goodness.
And so, while handcuffed, Smith was repeatedly slammed into the cop car's backseat barrier as the police kept slamming on the brakes, seemingly intentionally, according to the lawsuit. By the time he arrived at the jail, Smith said his face was bruised and his wrists were swollen and cut. Jailers allowed him a trip to the infirmary to get treated for the bruising and cuts, but then Smith said jail staff took his shirt and for some reason did not give it back after putting him back in his cell. Smith, feeling somewhat embarrassed, started banging on the window of the cell while other jailed women watched, asking if he could please have some basic clothing, which turned into basically the best part of his stay in jail, Smith said. The women were cheering me on like I was Magic Mike, and they were at LaBear.
Wow. That's insane.
Now, you remember a few months ago, we played a video of, it was like a police training video for how to interact with transgender people. And that's something that just needs to be a whole lot more widespread than it is.
Yeah. Well, people say all these things about these cops, and this is why.
Yeah.
Things like this is why cops have a bad rap. There's plenty of good cops out there, and there's plenty of douchebag cops.
Mm-hmm.
These stories are sickening because this poor guy could have been very badly injured just because of the seatbelt thing.
I was going to say, it sounds like he was.
Like, you know, bruises and cuts. And I mean, it could have been a lot worse than that. But to play God like that, you're not God. You're just a police officer. And you obviously have no right to be if that's how you're going to treat somebody.
Smith was able to make his $2,000 bail and was released by 9 a.m. the following morning. After his case was reset four times due to Burger King's failure to even respond to prosecutors, causing Smith to have to miss work and explain the embarrassing situation to family, friends, and coworkers, the case was dismissed. Still, for Smith, the dismissal wasn't enough to make up for being arrested for no reason, getting hit with a slew of slurs by police officers, spending a night in jail, and having to wade through the criminal justice system for 3 months. At one of the early court hearings, Smith said police apparently told prosecutors he was panhandling. And so the judge asked, quote, how much money do you usually make? End quote.
Oh my God. Texas is vile.
That's why it's our favorite state. Oh my God. It's a fucking shitbag of a state.
Seriously.
Quote, I've paid for my wrongs. I've had traffic warrants and other little mishaps, and I've spent my time or paid that off or done my restitution for those things. But it's such a different and horrifying feeling to be innocent and be in jail or in court, Smith said. It's a completely terrifying feeling. I felt like a caged animal, and there's nothing you can do. They're not going to believe you that you're innocent, and they're going to treat you just as horrible as everyone else in there.
Poor guy.
The next story comes from Vice, and we're turning away from the LGBT and politics towards my favorite topic, religion. An atheist is taking on Alcoholics Anonymous in a bid to get God out of the 12 steps. Can I get a hallelujah?
Yes.
Can I get an amen?
Yes.
A Toronto man has taken Alcoholics Anonymous World Services Inc. and the Greater Toronto Intergroup to the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario, alleging discrimination against atheists, agnostics, and freethinkers. The GTA Intergroup, which acts as a central organizing hub and directory for AA groups in Toronto, has essentially kicked out all atheist groups who have changed traditional AA language by taking out the word God from the 12 steps. There are currently 501 AA meetings held at 252 locations across the GTA. However, atheists looking for AA meetings without a God attached will not find one in any of them because the GTA Intergroup eliminated local atheist and agnostic meetings from their promotions and directories. Now, secular options in AA are officially considered non-existent in Toronto. Accordingly, questions remain as to whether the current AA program is modern enough for a pluralistic society. The first atheist and agnostic AA groups in Canada, Beyond Belief and We Agnostics, both of which are located in Toronto, were also the first agnostic and atheist groups to be booted out of an AA intergroup. Since then, similar patterns have developed in Vancouver and Kingston. Now, if you have ever been through Alcoholics Anonymous, I would love to talk to you on the show. 224-407-2724, producer@saratalk.com. Reach out to us. I'd love to have you on the show and see what your opinions are regarding the 12 steps and the religiosity of Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's my concern. Let's say you're picked up for the fourth time on a DUI and a federal judge, and this is in Canada, but we'll pretend it's in the United States. The judge orders you to go to AA as a part of your treatment and restitution. So now it is a governmentally mandated program that you attend. Separation of church and state? Anyone?
Yeah. So many ways I could go with this. Because my first thought is, like, I know people that were really super into their religion and they were alcoholics. But they were into their religion and they were alcoholics.
Right.
And then the minute they got out of their religion, that
the alcoholism went away. Kind of stopped.
Like, they, yeah. they, like, you know.
Interesting.
So, like, I wonder, are you now, like, if I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not religious, and now you want me to replace that alcohol with God, is that really such a good idea? I think that'd be a really good conversation.
Yeah.
To really get into it with somebody who's been through it. I've never been through it.
But. Now, I've reached out to an author who wrote a book about this, Roger C. They don't publish last names for anonymity's sake, but who's an author of Don't Tell, Stories and Essays by Agnostics and Atheists in AA, which explains how there appears to be an unofficial policy in AA, similar to the infamous Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the U.S. military regarding the treatment of LGBTQ community. So I'd really love to get my hands on a copy of that book and have Roger on the show to talk about that. Last year, Lawrence Wright, 58, known simply as Larry in the rooms, took AA to the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal to take a stand against how non-believers have traditionally been treated in AA. Knight found sobriety through AA after his drinking became too much for him to control in the early 90s, but he believes, like many others, that the words God and higher power which are rampant throughout AA literature, are outdated. More specifically, he's arguing that alcoholics who have been abused by religious fundamentalists in their childhood, himself included, can have negative associations with the word God. Some even find the religion and the ensuing dogma, which follows, highly triggering. Mm. So, imagine this scenario. You're diddled by a fucking Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
And because of all of the shame and anguish that comes along with that, you turn to alcohol. And then you get picked up for your fourth DUI, and the judge orders you to go to AA, where they make you find a higher power. Been there, done that. No Mm-mm. thanks. Found the higher power. He made me suck his dick.
They need to really buckle down on this separation of church and state in a whole lot of ways. But this seems like it could be very detrimental to somebody's well-being.
Right. And the concern with this for me is that, you know, fine, keep the word God. I don't give a shit. But allow, at least allow...
another option.
The other options.
Yeah.
Knight was one of a handful of people who started the secular meetings in Toronto in 2009 after having watched newcomers afflicted by the abuse of fundamentalists in traditional meetings for years. According to Knight, a newcomer once gave a talk about his atheism at a meeting where he was swiftly accused of, quote, sending people out to die, end quote, which is how fundamentalists interpret atheism in AA recovery. According to the tenets of AA, one must turn over their lives to the care... Who fucking writes these articles? One must turn over their lives to the care of God to stay sober, and to say otherwise is to send the suffering alcoholic back on the street where they will meet their painful death.
Those people need not be in charge of alcohol recovery groups.
Knight explained how atheists have kept their mouth shut for the sake of recovery, or out of fear of reprisal, or perhaps apathy, hoping the fundamentalism and exclusion in the rooms would eventually stop. Quote, we finally need to step up and address the things which need to be addressed. We owe it to ourselves, and we owe it to the future, and we owe it to everybody. End quote. The GTA intergroup has been stalling over the past year, but all parties will finally sit down for mediation toward the end of November in an attempt to avoid going to court. On November 6th, there will be a district meeting in which every general service representative from every AA group in Western Ontario will vote on a motion to eliminate the Lord's Prayer from that specific meeting.
It makes me wonder how many people that are atheists and alcoholics have gone through this program and kept their mouth shut
right.
and didn't really get the help they needed because of the program's
religious
whacked
lean.
Out
yeah.
whatever. So it didn't really help them because they're not, you know, but right. they just kept their mouth shut because it's court ordered. And then they go out of this program and they're still alcoholics and something even worse has happened. But it was because the program didn't help them. Like, that's a scary thought because alcoholism is a big thing. Like, that there's a lot of people that struggle with this. And if you're not getting the help that you need in the way that you need it, you know, what do? You're ordered to do this by the court. And so you just go through the steps and you go, yeah, okay.
So the last thing I wanted to mention about this is the challenge has been to the Greater Toronto Intergroup, right? With the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario, but also they've taken Alcoholics Anonymous World Services, Inc. as part of this, who requested that the application be dismissed because the applicant has not alleged that it discriminated against him and because the application is outside its jurisdiction of the tribunal. So because the Tribunal of Canada is outside the jurisdiction of the headquarters in New York.
Right.
Right. But the tribunal denied the request based on Knight's argument that although AAWS is located in New York, its services transcend all borders. So you shouldn't name your organization AA World Services Incorporated if you don't want to be involved in world court cases.
Right.
So mediation will begin on November 18th. We'll keep an eye on that. And again, if you have experience with Alcoholics Anonymous, I would love to talk to you. Please reach out to us. We'd love to have you on the show. Talk about your experience. 224-40-SARAH. 224-407-2724, producer@saratalk.com. Okay, so we're going to wrap the show up here. on a topic about Halloween last night. So we recorded the rest of the show on a previous day, but then this thing happened last night, and I said, we have to sit down and record. Unfortunately, because I work third shift, I had to sleep most of the day. I didn't get to get up and do Halloween with the kids like I like to do. Now we have a six-year-old and a one-year-old, and we're in a new neighborhood that we just moved into, and all of the houses are recently built within about the last year. So the whole neighborhood is new. I took
the kids.
Our kids.
I think this is the third house that we got to. So like maybe little guy's got a handful of candy in his bag, and we go by the rule that if they're not outside, but the porch light is on, then you can go knock on the door and do your trick-or-treat thing. But there was like no porch lights on.
And the other thing is, if you're not from Florida, you really have to understand how different trick-or-treating is in Florida. Now, where I'm from in Illinois, the porch light will be on and you will go knock on the door. Mm-hmm. And the person will open the door and put candy in your bag, right?
But
that's because it's so goddamn cold that everyone has to be indoors. But in Florida,
it was a block party,
like 80 something. So we're all in flip-flops and shorts and sitting, and people will actually sit on the end of their driveway.
And bring out the long chairs and the coolers and the...
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Carry on.
All right. We had gone to like two or three houses, and this is like maybe a half a block from our house. So it's kind of around the bend. You can't see this house from our yard. And there's this little girl. She's sitting outside with her dad, and they've got the garage door open, and they're sitting in chairs and just hanging out. And she's in a princess costume. One of the things you kind of learn is if they're sitting outside, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're participating. So you always kind of look to see if they've got a bowl of candy. As a parent, I'm on the lookout. I'm like, all right, okay, well, she's in a costume. All right, they must be participating in this, you know,
you event.
They're outside, right? So we start to walk up to the house, and little guy opens his bag up and he yells, trick or treat. And this little girl, she must have been maybe 4 or 5. She was about his age.
So old enough to know better.
Old enough to know better, I would hope. Not older than him, so it wasn't a bullying thing, I don't think. I think she was just either ignorant or her dad was teaching her the trick part of Halloween. Mm. She reaches in his bag and grabs a handful of candy and throws it in her bag and runs up into the garage, into the house, screaming, Mommy, Mommy, they gave me candy! And you can hear her mom, oh, good, honey! And dad just kind of looks and says, thanks! The smug little crap smile on his face. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I don't know if my mouth was still on the ground when I walked away, because I was just like shocked.
Now, not having been there, the hardest thing for me at this point in the story, you are such a bitch.
I can't believe you didn't lay into this guy. I know. Well, I was with my kids and I was like...
That's never stopped you before.
I know, but I was on foot and I'm like, this guy's my neighbor. I really don't want to be that bitchy neighbor just yet. Like, you know, like, so that kind of went through my mind. And then I was just like, is it worth it? Because I didn't even know. Like, I didn't even know what to say. And they were not English-speaking people. Is it just a communication error? Do they really not know what this Halloween thing is about? But I don't know. I got a feeling that dad knew and he was just kind of going to let it go. But he didn't even apologize or anything after the little girl left. That's what got me. Really?
Right.
You're going to just let her
and it makes
not
me
even
wonder,
say anything and then not even offer? Like, you obviously didn't have a bowl of candy if you're not going to, hey, you're here, buddy. Sorry. Here, have a little extra. That's what I would have done if my child had done that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just really weird.
But it also makes me wonder, like, how many other kids did they play that trick on?
I don't know.
If it's trick or treat. I don't know if it was a a planned thing or what. Like, I just don't.
It's hard to tell. I joked that I'll have some hard boiled eggs ready next year to put in her bag when she comes knocking.
There you go. So we posted the story to our Facebook. Aaron said, sounds like that house is in need of a trick.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yep.
At least your son took it well. Sounds like a hell of a good kid. Now, the problem with that is, though, he took it well for what a six-year-old can take it.
Right.
You said as he walked away from the house, he was like, I wish we were in our old neighborhood.
Well, in our old neighborhood, really sad. We had done it a few years in a row there with him. And
it was a lot of people.
It's a bigger neighborhood. There was more streets to go down, so you got a bigger hall. And like there was even a house that handed out juice boxes and full-size candy bars in our old neighborhood. So
On our Facebook, Jamie posted, "That's horrible." And Michael said, "How crazy is that? I would have been livid. The neighborhood makes or breaks Halloween."
Yep.
That's absolutely true. I want to know, do you have any horror stories from Halloween, this or Halloween's past? Call 224-40-SARAH, 224-407-2724. Let us know your crazy Halloween stories.
Can I tell everybody about the crackers?
Oh, God, please. Please talk about the crackers.
We have a neighbor.
No, hold on.
Not those crackers.
Yeah, this is also not a racial thing.
So the first house that we went to was right around the corner from us. Like, there's a little cul-de-sac, and the only house in the neighborhood that has a Trump Pence sign in the front yard. We were like, you know, walking up, and this guy comes out and he was handing out little bags of crushed, unlabeled sandwich crackers. It could have been peanut butter, cheddar flavor. I think it might have been the flavor of crushed American hopes and dreams. But in any case, if you're keep that in mind. Don't hand out unlabeled stuff.
Well, and that, you know, God, I was a kid.
And they were broken.
I was a kid
crushed.
Of the 80s, right? And that's all you heard every year was, parents, make sure to check your kids' candy to make sure there's no like needle holes and all this crazy shit.
I never got crazy crap like that.
No.
I mean, I heard it
every year, though.
I didn't really. I only had like a few years of trick-or-treating before we weren't allowed to anymore, but I don't remember getting. I mean, I was 8 when we stopped, so maybe I'm forgetting something.
That was always a big deal. So I don't know how I feel about the crackers. He seems to be okay, though, right?
Did he eat the crackers? He came home, and that was the first thing he ate. And I was like, oh, gosh, you didn't even let me check it. And so, but he seemed okay this morning. He wasn't sick or anything. So hopefully it was just an old guy had crackers, and that's what he was giving out. I don't know.
All right. Send us your stories, 224-407-2724, producer at sarahtalk.com. We'll put them on the next episode. This is episode 31. Episode 31? Yeah, sure. This is this is episode 30.
Oh,
yeah. We recorded enough for two episodes, and so this will be the end of the first half of that, and then next week you'll hear the second half of all the stuff that we recorded yesterday.
So confusing doing more than one show at a time.
I don't know what we're doing anymore. But hey, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. You've been listening to Sarah Talk.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/SarahTalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@SarahTalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/SarahTalkRadio and on Twitter @SarahTalkRadio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.